Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading World Radio Magazine, the April 2007 issue. Well, radio is published by Armand Noble, call sign N6WR. The editor is Nancy Cott, WZHC. They're headquartered at World Radio Incorporated, 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. The website is www.handyham.org. Let's begin today in the editor's log. The editor for World Radio is Nancy Cott, K-O-T-T. Nancy's call is WZ8C, Whiskey Zulu 8 Charlie. April showers might bring May flowers, but watching the freezing rain accumulate on the wires of my cubicle quad, it seems like spring will never arrive. It has been a rough winter for antennas at amateur radio station WZ8C. My G5RV... that's the antenna model, crashed to the ground when the tree holding up one end of it broke off during an ice storm. I can't answer the age-old question. If a G5RV falls in the woods and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound? But I can tell you that when a ham finds her G5RV has fallen in the woods, she makes a sound something like, "Ah, shoot," followed by a noise that sounds like a foot stomping. I recently bought the stuff to make a new dipole. Since my original had been in the air for 12 years, it was overdue for an overhaul anyway. I thought it would be fun to string up a beverage antenna across a small frozen lake in front of my house, but was told it would be a liability if it hurt a snowmobiler, even though snowmobiles are not supposed to be there in the first place. So, I've been without a backup antenna. If the ice collapses the quad, I'll be without an antenna, but hopefully those May flowers are just around the corner. I can put up the new G5RV in the sunshine. What do hams who live in extreme winter climates do for wire antennas? Is there a type that is hardier than others? Do they make it through repeated winter weather? Drop me a note and let me know what you think is the hardiest antenna and why. Have you invented any hints to increase the longevity of your antenna? I'll compile them and print them in an issue before next winter so we can be ready to settle down in the shack with more peace of mind. April is a good time to think about the health of your wire antenna. If you haven't looked at yours for a while, a simple visual inspection can tell you a lot. Out of sight, out of mind, only works for so long. Look at the coaxial, insulators, soldered joints, and connectors. Are they cracked or rusty? How's the waterproofing? Check the seals on the connectors and reseal if necessary. Is there water in your ballam? If so, and you don't want to replace it just yet, drill a small hole, drain the water, and seal it up with a hot glue gun or Cox seal. Check the support ropes, too. If they are stiff or strands or fraying, replace them. Disconnect the coax and check it with the dummy load and watt meter to make sure that it hasn't deteriorated over years. By using just one afternoon for preventative maintenance, you may be able to operate all through the summer trouble-free. Dayton Hamvention time is quickly approaching. The World Radio crew is coming in from California, and I'll be there running between the fists and the World Radio booth. I hope you can make it, especially if you haven't attended before. It's an incredible experience. We're looking forward to seeing you there. 73-88-33, Nancy, WZ8C. Folks, any comments you'd like to send along to Nancy, her address is WZ8C, P.O. Box 807, Hadley, H-A-D-L-E-Y, Michigan, M-I, 48440. The first major article this month in World Radio is the evolution of Boy Scout Headquarters Station K2BSA, Kilo 2, Boy Scouts America. The author is Walter Maxwell, W2DU, Whiskey 2 Delta Uniform. It's very likely that you've heard or heard of K2BSA, the club station at the National Headquarters of the Boy Scouts of America located in Dallas, Texas. Then it's also likely that you'd be interested in learning a little background on how the station originated. In 1910, Lord Baden-Powell founded the Boy Scout movement in England. The movement soon caught on in the United States, with its original headquarters located at 2 Park Avenue, New York City, until the early 1960s. After World War II, three top executives at Boy Scout headquarters were radio amateurs who desperately wanted to have a Boy Scout headquarters club station, but there was no room in the crowded office complex for such a frill. These amateurs were Lloyd Eberhardt, K2CVT, then publisher of all Boy Scout publications, the late Harry Hartshar, W2GND, editor of all Boy Scout publications, including Boy's Life, and E.E. Hosey's Hosington, K2GDR, chairman of the Safety and Health Department. Hosington is now W4YTA. Around 1960, these amateurs came upon some exciting news. Due to increasingly cramped office space, a move from New York City was essential. To make the move possible, headquarters had just acquired a pristine wooded acreage in North Brunswick, New Jersey, the location of Station WII, with its 200-kilowatt Alexanderson alternator transmitter operating at 21.8 kilohertz. This was the station used to transmit President Wilson's ultimatum to Germany that resulted in the ending of World War I. Our three amateurs descended onto the property with glee because, in addition to a long nature trail and large office complex building housing the headquarters business operations, a large, magnificent museum was built to display Boy Scouting memorabilia from all over the world. Their immediate thought was, what a neat place to operate and display ham radio. The main display room was about the size of a standard basketball court. At one end of the room, an attractive console was constructed of clear maple for the long-desired amateur station. Various manufacturers of amateur gear generously donated equipment to the station. Hallicrafter was the first, donating an SX-111 receiver, an HD-37 transmitter, and an HD-33 RF power amplifier. The late Al Kahn, K4FW, then with Electro Voice and later owner of Tentec, an EV664 microphone, and Telrex donated a tower, and its then top-of-the-line 3-band beam and rotator. Hammerlund donated its latest transceiver, and Heathkit donated an SB101 transceiver and an SB200 RF power amplifier. It was my good fortune to live in Dayton, New Jersey, only 8 miles south of the new headquarters. It's about 800 miles east of the Hamvention, Dayton. By sheer coincidence, Hoisey, K2GDR, moved in just down the street from me, and naturally, both being hams, we became good friends. What was even more fortunate for me was that he invited me to join with him, Lloyd, and Harry to assemble the station. Guess what? Among other tasks, they gave me the responsibility for the antennas. What a joy that task was. We four then formed the Boys Life Radio Club, and the original call sign to the new station was K2BFW. The station operation was very successful. Any scout and visitors who were licensed were given the opportunity to operate. But as luck would have it, the K2BFW operation seemed to go awry during the weekends of JOTA, the annual October Worldwide Jamboree on the Air for the Boy Scouts of the world. This was a time when we expected to have an exciting bit of operation with the new station, when Boy and Girl Scouts visit nearby amateur stations to talk with other Boy and Girl Scouts over amateur radio. And every year, we at headquarters had licensed scouts and scouters lined up for a 24-hour operation of Station K2BFW throughout the entire JOTA weekends. But alas, a distressing problem arose during JOTA every year. A scoutmaster, a licensed amateur in Pennsylvania, right across the Delaware River from us, obtained a special event call sign for the JOTAs, K3BSA. Wow, the pileups he drew. Everybody thought he was the headquarters station. Old K2BFW was left in his dust, and when we announced during every contest that we were the headquarters station, many of the contacts disbelieved this and told us to get off headquarters frequency. After several years of distressing problems emanating from K3BSA, I decided we needed more recognition and visibility. I decided to get a new call sign that would give us the clout we needed. On checking the call book, it was obvious that both W2BSA and K2BSA were in use. W2BS wasn't in use, but Better Than Nothing still stands for Boy Scouts. As a former monitoring officer with the Radio Intelligence Division of the FCC, I was personally acquainted with Rosell H. Hyde, then chairman of the FCC. I told him of the situation and asked his advice on how to proceed in obtaining a permanent assignment of the call sign W2BS to the Boy Scout headquarters station. He suggested that I present the situation in the form of a draft petition that he would take to the Chief of the Safety and Special Services Bureau for his comments. At that time, the amateur division fell under this bureau's jurisdiction, not the Federal Communications Commission. Chairman Hyde was in complete agreement with our request. However, Bureau Chief James Barr rejected the petition, saying there were no administrative rules allowing a special call sign to be assigned permanently in cases such as ours. In addition, he stated that old-timers who already had two-letter calls would object to a Boy Scout station having a two-letter call. This last comment in his response seemed to me to be a lame excuse. I started some research on poring over old call books from between 1921 and 1928. To my surprise, I found more than 50 two-letter calls assigned to Boy Scout troops all over the country during that early era. I also discovered the early FRC policy of assigning two-letter call signs to universities and colleges, all with suffixes beginning with Y. Lowercase y. My revised petition included a report on my findings concerning the two-letter calls assigned to Boy Scout troops in those early days. By this time, Chairman Hyde's tenure had expired, and he was replaced by Chairman Dean Bruch. However, Chairman Hyde remained as my advisor and heartily approved of the revised position. On Chairman Hyde's advice, I submitted the new petition directly to the FCC commissioners on 16 April 1968. One of the arguments in the new petition for a permanent assignment of a call sign for the headquarters station I thought would help our position was that in addition to its use at headquarters, the call could also be used by other scouting groups for their activities in all parts of the country, simply by obtaining permission from the current trustee of W2BS and applying the appropriate slant N for the district in which the operation occurs. This aspect of the permanent call sign would then relieve the FCC staff from the paperwork required to process special event call signs for other official scouting activities such as jamborees. After the usual long wait for bureaucratic action, on April 1, 1969, I received a letter directly from the chairman of the FCC himself, Dean Bruch, saying the commission found that they believed the call sign K2BSA would give Boy Scout headquarters the recognition and prestige required to let the amateur community know who we were every time we went on the air. Petition request granted. Eventually, the station and the headquarters for the Boy Scouts of America was moved to Dallas, Texas. Alas, a firm, unbendable high-level headquarters decision was made that there would be no amateur radio operation and no antenna erected at the new building in Dallas. Fortunately, a Dallas scouter who was also an ardent amateur, the late Walter Dan Dansby, Jr., W5URI, considered it untenable that K2BSA operation was killed simply by bureaucratic executive order. Dan then started a search for a suitable location to house K2BSA and get it back into operation. He initially found a place to house the station at Camp Schumann on Lake Worth near Azle, Texas, and later moved it to its permanent home at Camp Wisdom in Dallas. The station's trustee is Ray Moyer, WD8JKV, and the station manager is Frank Creason, K-R-I-Z-A-N. K2BSA's equipment consists of two HF operating positions, a VHF slant UHF satellite position, VHF slant UHF voice and packet position, and amateur TV, ATV operating position. The station is operated during Jamboree on the Air, that's JOTA now, and several other weekends of the year. The maintenance is done by crew 73 members and advisors of Richardson, Texas. Beginning in September 2000, K2BSA has been operating and open certain Saturdays of each month for visiting scout groups to tour and talk with other hams and perhaps other scouts around town, around the country, and often the world. Watch the K2BSA website for details or call the Circle 10 Council Reservations Desk at the following phone number, 214, that's area 214-902-6764, to schedule a visit. Finally, it is comforting to know that through the operation of K2BSA, amateur radio is being kept alive within the Boy Scout movement, giving its youth an introduction to our hobby and service, and hopefully instilling a desire in them to become a part of the great amateur radio community. We thank Walter Maxwell, W2DU, for this very fine article titled The Evolution of Boy Scout Headquarters, Station K2BSA, Kilo 2, Bravo Sierra Alpha. Our next piece is a bit shorter. It's in the DX World category. DX, the letters DX, indicate distant stations that amateur radio operators contact from the contiguous United States to stations elsewhere in the world. This one's titled, Who's the K6? The author, Kelly Jones, November 0, Victor Delta, and 0 VD. Recently, while trying to bust the pileup for one of the major de-expeditions, something occurred to me that I hadn't noticed before. Regardless of who the DX station was asking for, stations kept calling and calling. For instance, the DX station would ask for K6. K6 happens to be the prefix for a California station. And you would hear every combination of calls answering except a K6. In other words, folks, everybody from anywhere that could hear this very, very rare DX station broke in regardless of the courtesy required for waiting your turn and then being acknowledged. There was even one instance of a station calling over and over again right in the middle of the contact, QSO. It didn't seem to matter that the DX station was not asking for this station. He would just keep dumping his call in regardless of what was going on. I stopped for a minute and thought about this. When did this become acceptable behavior? I have been licensed for nearly 25 years, which by some accounts isn't very long, but by others, I would be considered an old-timer. I don't recall things ever being this bad. When did we start believing that if you keep calling, the DX station will answer you, even if he's not asking for you? I know from personal experience that this behavior is nothing new. In my mini-expedition to the Caribbean, I have witnessed the incessant calling firsthand. However, I didn't realize things had sunk to a level that I recently heard. I suppose it might be possible to equate the level of poor behavior to the rareness of a de-expedition, but by no means should it be acceptable. Think about this. You are standing in line at the DMV, that's Division of Motor Vehicles, baby. You have number 72, and they call number 58. Would you just jump into the front of the line and expect to be served? Or perhaps you are waiting for a table at a restaurant, and the hostess calls Shoemaker, Party 4. But every Smith, Jones, and Brown parties come running to the front expecting to get seated. I don't think so. Of course not. So why, then, has it become acceptable for every station to call, regardless of who the DX asks for? The Italians have always had a bad rap in this area, but I think, based on what I've heard recently, the United States operators may have inherited this title. It was also quite interesting that during the same morning I was witnessing this poor behavior, another DX station was running JAs, that's Japanese call sign stations. The DX would ask for JR1, and the only station that would reply was JR1, ba ba ba. Nobody else would call. It was quite a pleasure to listen to the etiquette and consideration displayed by the JA ops. By contrast, the DX working the JAs had a much better QSO rate than the earlier pilot. And if you think about it, that makes perfect sense. If a DX station has to ask for K6 three or four times before he gets the full call because of QRM, which is a cue signal for excessive noise background, and incessant calling, that's three or four other stations he didn't work. That's also three or four opportunities that could have been you. This incessant calling not only reduces the number of stations being worked, but it also can frustrate the DX operator. As I mentioned, I have experienced this behavior firsthand. When it gets to the point where it seems the pilot isn't listening to what I'm asking, I have had the good fortune of being able to either QSY, that is, move, to another band, or in some cases simply turn the rig or radio off and go to the beach. I don't blame you. Obviously, the big DX positions aren't afforded this luxury, so this behavior can wear their patience pretty thin. Folks, before I go any further, I want to explain something that those of you who might not have heard much about amateur radio or ham radio and are wondering what you're hearing about the call letters or the way they're spoken. There is such a thing as an international phonetic table of expressive words that are precisely acceptable for instant recognition by any ham radio operator in the world, or so it's believed. I just completed this article on the Boy Scouts of America, and you notice I said it two or three different ways. The call station's call was W2BSA, that's W2 Boy Scouts America, if you hear it over the airwaves by people operating. But in technically acceptable terms, it's actually W2, or Whiskey 2, Bravo Sierra Alpha. Bravo Sierra Alpha is part of the internationally accepted phonetic code. And I do that quite often on here, not only to be, let's say, correct, but also to train your ear to understand why there is a certain word used for each letter, because that is the word that's become pretty well synonymous with people who know how to hear for the right letters. And everything in amateur radio, once you start talking, has to do with letters. Especially when you get to the acronyms like FCC, Federal Communications Commission. Sometimes you just have to say Federal Communications Commission, not Foxtrot Charlie Charlie. I hope you understand where I'm going with this, huh? Enough of that. Let's go on to traffic. And this isn't your automobile traffic down at the stoplight. This is amateur radio traffic. The good old days. Boy, a lot of us older folks do think about the good old days, don't we? And that's part of human nature. The author here is Jim Wades, W-A-D-E-S, Wades. Kilo 8 Sierra India Whiskey, call sign K8SIW. When I was first licensed over 30 years ago, amateur radio seemed very fraternal. It seemed most shared common interests and all shared the same difficulties on the path to obtaining a license, the most significant being the radio telegraph examination, which couldn't be fudged by memorizing questions and answers from a pre-published question pool. Becoming a radio amateur was somewhat like becoming a Freemason. Only after learning the complex ritual and passing the examinations did one earn the right to call himself a Master Mason. Like Freemasonry, membership in the amateur radio fraternity often meant instant camaraderie when you encountered a fellow operator, even if one was 1,000 miles from home. New operators who made the grade were warmly welcomed. Individuals seemed to debate issues with a bit less rancor. Radio clubs seemed more cohesive, and public service seemed better supported. Of course, the past always looks better than it was. We have a subtitle here, These Are the Good Old Days. While the past looks nice from the distance, it is important that we put things in perspective and accept change. In many respects, the amateur radio of today is a much better place. We are fortunate to have a wide variety of modes and capabilities available for our use. Numerous digital modes, FM and D-Star repeaters, EchoLink, and so forth, have given us a virtual smorgasbord of opportunities to try new and exciting communications technologies. New bands and frequencies are within reach of far more radio amateurs than 30 years ago. Radio equipment is better, too. A modern solid-state transceiver is a bargain. In real economic terms, a transceiver manufactured today offers a far wider range of capabilities at a fraction of the price of 3 decades ago, when I was first licensed. Equipment is smaller, lighter, and more reliable. A host of small portable QRP, that's low-power transceivers, or FM handhelds, can be taken most anywhere. Small equipment can even be tossed in a backpack and carried on a 2-week wilderness trip without much concern for weight. The Internet has not only made exciting new hybrid modes possible, it has made it far easier to promote amateur radio and conduct our organizational affairs. When I was first appointed an ARRL, that's American Radio Relay League, emergency coordinator in the 1970s, most correspondence had to be conducted via U.S. mail. One could keep an old Royal Manual typewriter pretty busy on just volunteer work. Most other business was conducted on a weekly ARIS, that's Amateur Radio Emergency Service, net, or via multiple telephone calls on a rotary phone. Today, one can send a newsletter or a bulletin out to hundreds of ARIS members with a click of a button. In short, the amateur radio service should be celebrating its bounty. Radio amateurs, both old and new, have access to unprecedented technology at a bargain basement cost. Licensing is far easier, examinations are more accessible, and one needn't assemble his own transmitter or receiver. If one does choose to build, however, there are plenty of first-class kits available on the market offering unprecedented performance. By almost any measure, these are the good old days. So, how are we managing this bounty of opportunity? Some feel the need to attack the operating interests of others. This person hates EchoLink, which is actually voice over internet protocol, VOIP technology. Another person feels the need to attack traffic handling. Yet another forms opinion about CW, the old Morse code, without any real experience using the mode. And on it goes. Monitor the comments posted on popular internet forums such as QRZ.com and e-ham.net, and one finds the content that often reflects poorly on the amateur radio service. As a matter of fact, some of it resembles a bunch of grammar school children arguing on the playground. There is time for change. The resolution of the CW, Morse code testing debate test, presented amateur radio with a rare opportunity to make a fresh start. The time has come for radio amateurs to concentrate on what unites us, an interest in the art and science of radio communications. There is no need to attack the operating interests of another. There is plenty of room for everyone, particularly if we take a positive approach through compromise and accommodation. Let's start this new era by concentrating on what is most beneficial to all. In particular, we have an unprecedented opportunity to reshape our local and national amateur radio organizations to ensure that time and resources are spent on public and media relations, member recruitment and retention, and making amateur radio accessible and visible in our communities. Like the good old days, let's also take a stand for the values that made amateur radio great. Let's insist on inculcating good operating practices by setting a peerless example for new operators. Let's make a clear statement that the quality of a radio amateur is determined not by the mode he operates, but rather by the level of courtesy, decorum, and content contained within his communications, both on air and online. Let's reach out to the type of individual who will most likely contribute to the health and viability of amateur radio. Let's make a renewed commitment to public service and emergency communications. Finally, let's give no quarter to those who would divide us, those who feel the need to attack constructive on-air activity should be given no voice. Such divisive practices hold power only if they are acknowledged and evoke response. Here's a parenthesis. QRZ forum users, please take note. We must do our best to discourage divisive and damaging activity. The fact is, all the ingredients for an amateur radio renaissance are right here in our midst. The only missing ingredient is genuine leadership and a willingness to work together to encourage their constructive application. Let's ensure that the good old days are not a thing of the past. Everyone can do something, even if it is simply the act of getting on the radio and operating in a constructive manner. The piece is signed by Jim, K8SIW, Kilo 8 Sierra, India Whiskey. Jim Wades has changed his call sign to K8SIW. You may contact him via postal mail to Jim Wades, W-A-D-E-S, Post Office Box 457, Allegan, A-L-L-E-G-A-N, Michigan, M-I, zip code 49010. His email address is WB8SIW at charter. charter.net. Up next is 1010 International, titled Change is Inevitable. The author of this material, Gerald F. Gross, called WA6POZ, Whiskey Alpha 6 Papa Oscar Zulu. Well, we all knew it would happen sooner or later. The latest change is the CW requirements being removed from licensing requirements. That's being able to send and receive Morse code. This was announced by the FCC on 15 December 2006. While a surprise as to the timing and the way it was announced, the change was anticipated. It all started many years ago. In the beginning, there was only CW, continuous wave, Morse code. Then along came AM, SSB, FM, SSTV, RTTY, PSK, etc. Also add all the technical improvements such as the transistor and integrated circuits. One change after another, add to that the computer age and its impact. With each technical improvement and new transmission mode, CW was becoming less of a sustaining mode. I'm not trying to be negative, only saying that change is inevitable. Tomorrow, who knows what amateur radio will be like? It is not dying. It is always evolving, changing with the times. CW will be around for a long time to come. It is not dead. To many, it's just not as relevant as it was 40, 50, 60 years ago. Changes take place in every aspect of our lives and happens every day to us, our family and friends, our workplace, and the environment. We live with change, and we can adapt and live with the changes to amateur radio. As for 1010, we should welcome those that are new to 10 meters and help guide them to be successful. Hopefully, membership will reflect the success of our endeavors. While on the subject of changes, in December, Joe Williams called WA9TSG, number 310, a director, decided to resign. Joe's health had been in decline. And with the elections and the change in 1010 leadership, Joe felt it was the best to retire from the board. Joe served as a director for 12 years. He has also been the editor of the 1010 News and was the convention chairman of the second 1010 convention that was held in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Joe was also involved as the chapter head of the Milwaukee chapter of 1010, a chapter that has been in existence since the mid-60s. Joe will always be a part of 1010, and his advice and guidance in the future will continue to be appreciated. With Joe's resignation and with the board's approval, I asked Bob Farrow, F-A-R-R-O-W, Bob's call is N6OPR, his 1010 number is 45715, 45,715, to assume the vacancy. Bob has been involved as a net control for many years and ran for director during the last election. I've asked Bob to take over the position of net manager and be responsible for the operation of the daily 1010 nets. As I was writing this article, I received an email from Vice President Mike Elliott, K7BOI, number 54625, tendering his resignation. Mike and I have become close since Chuck Imsam's W6YLJ, number 19636, past present, stroke in June of 2005. Mike has done an outstanding job during that time. He has served in the past as the information manager and as a director. Mike's work commitment requires that he travel most days, leaving little time for family, friends, amateur radio, and 1010. No replacement has been announced for him at this time. Change is inevitable. Here's a bit of commentary about the 1010 future event, or events. The spring CWA Slant Digital QSO party will be held from 0001 Zulu, that's Greenwich Mean Time, on 05 May through 2359 Zulu, Greenwich Mean Time, 06 May. The QSO party is open to all. However, logs can only be submitted by active 1010 members as of the date of the party. 1010 will again be at the Dayton Hamvention. All are welcome to stop by booth 326, sign the log, and greet the officers, directors, and others who will be manning the booth. 1010 will also host a forum where we will bring all in attendance up to date with current activities and answer any questions. And look for us this year at HamCom in Plano, Texas. We are planning on both the booth and the forum, but as of this writing, plans have not been confirmed. The easiest way to obtain information about 1010 is to visit the 1010 website at www.ten-ten.org. Everything you want to know about the organization is on the web, including a downloadable membership application form. The author, Jerry Gross, G-R-O-S-S, called WA6POZ. 1010 number 21274, 21274, 1010 president, is at 16046 Orchard Circle, Omaha, Nebraska, N.E., zip code 68135. Or you can email Jerry, that's G-E-R-R-Y, at W-A-6-P-O-Z at ARRL.net. Well, folks, this is your Rita Bob again. I'm just sitting here in the dark morning hours of, what's today? Oh, yeah, March 17, 2007. Oh, gracious, it's St. Paddy's Day. Well, congratulations to all you believing Irish. Hi, hi. I'm thinking about the spring weather. Well, I have to tell you, we are having a howling nor'easter here since yesterday, which would have been Friday, the March 16th. And it's howling, it was snowing, and now it's turning to rain. Everything is iced over with everything coated very heavily, and of course the roads are treacherous. So why do I mention that? I'm looking at hamfests. Those are the get-togethers of people interested in amateur radio around the country. And I'm going to give you a brief commentary on the states that are listed here. In case you happen to be listening and are in one of those states, you can perhaps get over there and visit. And I will give it to you alphabetically so that nobody is offended. California. Valley of the Moon Amateur Radio Club, called W6AJF. The annual ARRL Ham Fest will be held 28 April at the Sonoma Valley Veterans Memorial Building, 126 First Street West, Sonoma, California. The great state of Georgia. I hope the peaches are ripening up there. We can use them. 2007 11th Annual Southeastern VHF, Very High Frequency Society Conference, will be held 27th through 28 April in Atlanta, Georgia. Also in Georgia, the Cherokee Capital Amateur Radio Society Ham Fest will be held 28 April at the Sugar Valley Community Center, Sugar Valley, Georgia. We'll go to Idaho. If there are any potatoes in the ground right now, I think they're hard as rocks, folks. But we'll talk about ham radio here. It's called the Voice of Idaho Amateur Radio Club. We'll host the annual Southwestern Idaho Ham Fest, 28 April, at Valley View Middle School, 16412 South 10th Avenue, Caldwell, Idaho. In the state of Illinois, Moultrie Amateur Radio Club, 46th Annual Ham Fest, will be held 29 April at Arthur Firehouse on Illinois RT 133 on the southwest side of Arthur, Illinois. Massachusetts Framingham Amateur Radio Association Spring Flea Market will be held on the first day of April at Keith Technical School, 750 Winter Street, Framingham, Massachusetts. Framingham's about 35 miles slightly west of Boston. North Carolina, Raleigh Amateur Radio Society, 35th Hamfest. NCS ARRL Convention and Electronic Flea Market will be held 01 April at the Expo Center Building, NCS Fairgrounds, Raleigh, North Carolina. Also in North Carolina, 10th Annual Catawba Valley Hemp Fest on the 21st of April at the Burke County Fairgrounds, 145 Boast Road, Morgantown, North Carolina. North Dakota, it's cold up there. Red River Radio Amateurs Annual Hemp Fest and Flea Market on the 21st of April at the Red River Valley Fairgrounds. Ohio, Athens County Amateur Radio Association 28th Annual Ham Fest and Flea Market on the 29th of April at the Athens Community Recreation Center, Athens, Ohio. And also in Ohio, Cayuga Falls Amateur Radio Club 53rd Annual Ham Fest Electronics and Computer Show on the 15th of April at Emilio and Sons Party Center, 48 East Bath Road, Cayuga Falls, Ohio. And don't let us forget the state of Texas. Radio Club of America will hold its first annual Texas dinner. That's a twist, isn't it? First, after these 48s and 53s, annual Texas dinner on the 17th of April at the Waco Convention Center, Brazos South Room 100, Washington Street, Waco, Texas. The dinner here is in conjunction with the 2007 Texas APCO Conference and Exhibition and is open to RCA members and non-members alike. And while I'm doing the roll call here, I'll give you some special events also. Shark's Tooth Festival. Tamiami Amateur Radio Club will operate special event station K4S, Kilo 4 Sierra, from the annual Venice Shark's Tooth Festival. That's what it says. Oh, yeah, Shark's Tooth. Oh, I get it. 22 April 2007. Bowerman Airfield Control Tower. Grays Harbor Amateur Radio Club, W7ZA, Whiskey 7 Zulu Alpha, will celebrate the 52nd year birthday special event station at the Hukweyem Bowerman Airfield Control Tower on 0900 Pacific Time, 28 April, 1600 Pacific Time, 29 April. You figure that out when it comes to Greenwich Mean Time, folks. Okay, we don't have time for that right now. Last one here is Memorial Submarine Radio Weekend. USS Cobia, that's C-O-B-I-A, Radio Club, N9BQV, November 9, Bravo, Quebec, Victor, and the Manco Rad Radio Club, call W9DK, will operate special event station aboard the World War II submarine USS Cobia, which is designated AGSS-245, to celebrate Memorial Submarine Radio Room Weekend, the 28th and 29th of April. And I'm going to go now to Newsfront, World Radio, Newsfront, amateur radio news courtesy of ARRL Letterant Newsline. Listen up for you people that have a license and would like to take a little trip for yourself. It says here, Botswana, the expedition looking for two more operators. Boy, I'd like to jump on that, I think, although I'm not sure anymore. A summer 2007, the expedition to Botswana is looking for more operators. Charles Frosty Frost, called K5LBU, reports that they have a good place to operate from, but still are in need of two more operators. A lot of the places are not too good to operate from, folks in DX, but that's all part of the hobby. If you would like to be part of this operation, you will need to pay your own expenses and bring a laptop for logging. All antennas and radios are already in Johannesburg, South Africa. Current plans call for the operators to meet up in Johannesburg on 04 July and be at the operating site on 05 July. Daniel Hubbard, call ZS6JR, Zulu Sierra 6 Juliet Romeo, one of the team members, says he has found an operating location on a large game farm in Botswana that is about a six-hour drive north of Johannesburg. He says there is room to put up all the antennas and that the electric power is good. The operators expect to depart from Botswana on 20 July and fly home 21 July. Call K5LBU, says he will be at Visalia for the International DX Convention in April. He invites everyone to stop by and talk to him. If you want to join the Botswana team, please email him via his website at the following, www.k5lbu.com. And here's an update on ham radio in space. AMSAT North America and AMSAT United Kingdom will donate a total of 40,000 euros, which is approximately $52,000 American, to AMSAT Germany for funding the continued operation of the Central Development Lab for Electronics, ZEL. The major current project in ZEL is the construction of the Phase 3E ham radio satellite. Phase 3E is considered vital to the amateur radio space community because there are currently no high-orbit satellites carrying analog transponders allowing multiple simultaneous DX contacts. ZEL was established over 20 years ago at the University of Marburg for satellite construction. Several amateur space frames have been constructed, integrated, and tested there, including the famous Oscar 13 that was given to us by AMSAT through AR Newsline. And here's another good DXer, Holy Land DX. The 2007 Holy Land DX contest, sponsored by the Israel Amateur Radio Club, will be held 21 April from 000 UTC, Universal Time Constant, and that's Greenwich Mean, folks, to 2359 Universal Time Constant. Trophies and certificates will be issued to participating ham radio operators and shortwave listeners, SWLs, from different classes and modes of operation. This year's contest is dedicated to the memory of Meyer Lang, called 4X-Ray 1 Zulu Oscar, and Aaron Krishner, 4X-Ray 1 Alpha Tango, both of whom became silent keys. They have passed on after the last contest in 2006. For additional information, visit the IARC, that's Israeli Amateur Radio Club's website at www.iarc.org. They furnished that to AR Newsline. I'm going to squeeze in one bit of information here. Find that grid online. If you are looking for a particular grid square, then Laurent Haas, call F6FVY, may have exactly what you need. Haas has programmed the tool based on Google Earth so that you can click on any spot in the world and the corresponding full grid locator is automatically displayed. Go to Haas's website to use the free service. Adjust the map to the desired location and click on the spot you want to know the data on. A small window will pop up with the longitude, latitude, and a grid square locator. Now here's the website. It's rather long, but it will drop you right onto that screen if you follow it closely. I'll go slowly. The website is http://f6fvy.free.fr/gth. Uppercase L, lowercase OCATOR/ full uppercase S, lowercase CREEN.html. So folks, let's tear that apart just a little bit for clarity. He's actually mentioning his call sign, Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Victor Yankee, and then the word free, F-R-E-E, and then FR/, GTH, and then the word locator, full screen, .html. If you can make sense of that, good luck. You will have earned a spot on the internet to get your grid squares conveniently. You have to have some fun with this, folks, you know. And this gentleman did a great job and a good service for all people interested. Here's a piece about Durham, a North Carolina hams in the Bahama Parade, where they assist with emergency. The author is Woody Woodward, call K3VSA. A local amateur radio club's emergency communications van was a part of the Bahama, North Carolina annual Christmas parade, and the amateur radio operators on board figured prominently in an emergency response to a child who was injured just before the parade began. The Durham FM Association, an organization of amateur radio operators from Durham and surrounding counties, entered their mobile communications unit, that's an MCU, van as one of the approximately 150 floats in Bahama's holiday parade. The MCU was occupied by John Lay May, KB4WGA, emergency coordinator for Durham County's branch of the Amateur Radio Emergency Service, that's called ARIS, and Don Watt Jr., KE4UVJ, Assistant Emergency Coordinator for Durham ARIS. At about 9:45 a.m., 15 minutes before the parade was to begin, a young girl fell from the float she was on, landing in a ditch onto a metal culvert pipe, lacerating her chin. John LeMay's emergency communications training kicked in, and he immediately contacted 911 using his cell phone, which was the most expeditious way of handling this particular situation. Police, fire department, and rescue units in the parade responded at once to provide assistance to the young girl, who was reportedly celebrating her birthday that day. The identity of the victim, whom John guessed to be about 8 years old, was not immediately available. Quoting, "We didn't expect to be involved in an emergency situation," explained John. "And so we weren't attending the communications equipment in the MCU. There were lots of people around who witnessed the accident, but it seemed like everyone was wrapped up in trying to help, and I guess nobody except the hams thought about contacting the emergency service folks." John had no further information as to the girl's present condition, but he added, "Next year, I think we'll look into having MCU activated. Not a bad idea. And maybe stationing hams with handheld radios along the parade route, just in case." Very good idea, Woody Woodward, with your call K3VSA from Durham FM Association. Folks, that's a common occurrence if you're not an amateur radio operator or in the ham hobby. these major parades, like these running things, the Boston Marathon, New York Marathon, they have hundreds of amateur radio operators living in these local communities with very small handheld radios in most cases. They're the size of the police radio handheld you see at the traffic light once in a while, helping to move things along. That's the great part of amateur radio, quick, instant communications, and they don't have to pay us either. Hi, hi. Folks, we're at the 54, 55-minute mark right now. I'm going to do one more. Awards. England's Scouting 100 Radio Award. The objectives. To help celebrate the centenary of scouting through the medium of radio, to help publicize the centenary, and to provide radio amateurs the opportunity of gaining another award. Although not intended for profit, any surplus made will go to support radio scouting in developing countries. The award is offered for contacting or hearing, if you're a shortwave listener, scout stations during 2007, the centenary year of scouting. The award period will begin at 0001 on 01 January 2007, so it's already begun, and finish at 23:59:59, the last second tick of 31 December 2007. The award is available through all bands and all modes, including Echolink and IRLP, within the terms of the individual's radio license. The award can be endorsed for any special modes or bands, for example, all satellite contacts, all QRP contacts, which is very low power, etc. Activity of the award should be focused around the scout frequencies. The awards are offered in five categories. One is a bronze award for achieving 15 points by contacting scout stations. The second is silver award for achieving 50 points by contacting scout stations. Third is gold award for achieving 100 points by contacting scout stations. And four, we're going up there, platinum award for achieving 250 points by contacting scout stations. Five, the Diamond Award for achieving 500 points by contacting scout stations. Awards for bronze, silver, and gold awards will be paper certificates. The platinum will be a plaque, and the diamond will be a crystal trophy. The point values. Stations are required to contact scout and guide stations to count for points as follows. One, each ordinary scout station counts 1 point. Two, special event scout stations count 2 points. Three, the World Jamboree. Gilwell Park and Brownsea Island stations count 5 points. Listen for them, fellas and gals. Your log should be verified as accurate by two other local radio amateurs. Normal log information is required with the following additional information. Name, scout details, and age of operator of the station you contact. Your age should also be submitted when applying for award. Female operators send YL as their age, young lady, not the age number. Ha, ha, ha. You can claim points for contacting scout stations regardless of the call you are operating from. So, if you are operating a club station, then the points still count for your total. Only the person operating can claim the points for that contact, not anyone within earshot. The costs are as follows. Bronze, silver, and gold awards will be 3.50 pounds, posted to anywhere in the world. Platinum awards will be 15 pounds, posted to anywhere in the world. If you manage to qualify for the diamond award, please apply for prize. Send logbook extract and proper fee to Radio Scouting Award, 50, Laurel, L-A-U-R-E-L, Close, C-L-O-S-E, North Warnboro, with direction north, W-A-R-N-B-O-R-O-U-G-H, Hook, H-O-O-K, Hampshire, H-A-M-P-S-H-I-R-E. The zipper there is R-G-29-1-B-H. United Kingdom. A log spreadsheet and other information may be downloaded from the internet at www.scouting100award.org, or you can email them for info at, that's I-N-F-O, at scouting100award.org. The 100 is numerals. That winds it up for this month, folks, for the digest reading of World Radio Magazine, April 2007.